Slammed. I'm Megan Ottolini, and as always, we got Esteban Bustios and Justin Turpin in the house. What's up, guys?
How much? Excited. A little cold, but we're good.
1 week away from real basketball. Can't wait.
Yeah, it's getting a little chillier out there. It's like gray and rainy. You know that the NBA season is coming. No more preseason. Well, we're recording this on a Tuesday, so technically there is one more preseason game. Yeah. So we'll get to that, and we'll get to the season. We'll get to our expectations for opening night. But first, guys, I want to take a big picture conversation to you. And I say big picture because it is literally the big picture.
Yeah.
Something that we haven't talked so much about, and it hasn't been a huge topic in training camp because it kind of is what it is the Kristaps Porzingis injury rehab coming back situation. It's just, it's an injury. So it's not like you can want to check in every single week and go, what's he doing now? What's he doing now? Yeah, what drills is he in now? We get it. It's going to be a process. Hopefully he gets back sometime around December. But until that point, I just think this is one of the more compelling spots of this Celtics team to look at, especially because we heard from Joe Mazzulla that Al Horford is going to play in the final preseason game, which if you're listening to this may have already happened. But what do you think about the way that the Celtics will be able to handle themselves between Al Horford, who's been very limited in preseason, and the rest of the bigs that they have on this preseason roster until Kristaps Porzingis comes back? Esteban, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I mean, just, you know, it's notable Horford hasn't played at all before tonight, which he is supposed to. But 0 minutes so far in the preseason. I guess, you know, looking forward to the regular season, I, Turp and I were talking before we started recording, it's like, does he actually start? Is it a difference between he's not a starter, but he's a closer? I think, obviously, they were able to make do with Horford in the playoffs, and that was a huge benefit for the Celtics. He's 38. I don't feel like you can really play him, wear him down too much. And fingers crossed. But like, what happens if he gets injured while you are in the process of trying to wait out Porzingis? I don't know. I'm fascinated to see how they balance it. How do you feel about that?
Not Esteban Terp. I had to ask you really quick because that was just kind of like an existential situation that you threw out there in life. Would you rather be a starter or a closer?
I'd rather be a closer. Always.
You know, this is what I always think is overlooked about baseball, to go on a completely different sport. Mm. But when I was growing up, I don't know how you guys felt, I always thought closers were like the coolest pitchers.
Yeah.
Because I was like, here he comes in.
Yeah.
He's a closer. Like, he gets to win the game. He gets to run out of the bullpen to some cool song.
They stand up for every pitch you throw.
Yeah. It wasn't until I was like 11 that people were like, no, the starters, that's where the ace is. Those the good pitchers. And I was like, well, I'd rather be the closer. That guy's got the cool job, and he doesn't have to, he doesn't have to go the whole game.
Yeah, and I guess there's like a basketball sixth man, but it doesn't really feel the same. I mean, I think, who knows, maybe that's a situation that Horford is of a closer. But how do you feel, Terp?
I think I'm more confident than ever in the bigs after this preseason, just what we've seen from guys like Cornette and Xavier Tillman. Start with my boy Tillman.
I know, because I have to do it. This is going to be catnip
but
for
he's,
you.
He's 6 of 8 from deep this preseason, and it's a really small sample, really small sample size, considering he's like a 26% shooter and over the course of his career. But if he can be a floor spacer and he can knock down those threes, that gives them so many different looks and really extends what they can do. But also with Cornette, you just see that familiarity with him in the lineup with the starters and him being able to act as a connector, and he naturally kind of brings attention to the center of the paint so they can play inside out with Cornette. I've really liked what I've seen with him too. So with both the bigs, no matter who it is, they've shown that they can win quite a few games with whoever's in there.
Yeah, you weren't in such a dissimilar situation at this time last year. Obviously, Porzingis was healthy, but Luke Cornette was playing a lot of minutes during different stretches of the regular season, and they look great.
Yeah.
If you can go back, I know this was a big stat that people like to throw out there, and I don't have it top of mind, but or readily available at my fingertips, but it was, the Celtics had far and away a winning record when Porzingis was out.
I believe it was 21-4.
There we go.
Believe.
So nice job there, producer Terry. So it's not like it's going to be such a huge problem. I just think every year that you're in this, it becomes more complicated when, as we were talking about right before the show, Al Horford is in year 18. Al Horford's career is an adult. Al Horford's career can buy cigarettes.
We're kind of crazy. We didn't think about it that way, huh?
We're getting to the point now where there's probably rookies who are as old as Al Horford's career. There's probably an 18-year-old.
Yeah, I'm sure there is. Yeah, somebody right from now. The draft. Like, I don't know. Maybe we take it for granted sometimes, and we certainly talk about it when Al won his first championship. Mm-hmm. That was a big focus about his longevity in this league and how long he had to wait to get there. But the downside of that situation is that, I don't fault them for not playing him in Abu Dhabi or these other preseason games, even if at that point you're supposed to be ambassadors of the game and it's on world stage. Okay, you need him to stay solid, because even when you bring Kristaps back, what do you guys think? I think that's going to be an extremely slow and deliberate process, probably against what he wishes.
Yeah. Do we know how much, if at all, has he done any like basketball stuff?
He said he'd been doing light contact, and that was on media day.
Yeah, that was the last update that I heard.
But he has been sharing videos of him in the gym and stuff, so it seems like he's progressing.
Well, if it's videos in the gym, it's huge. That has to be huge.
And Brad Stevens also said that they were surprised about how fast he was coming along. All this on media day, so about, 2 weeks ago now at this point?
That was only 2 weeks ago?
It's
going to be 3 weeks ago.
3 weeks ago?
Oh, my gosh.
It's been a long preseason. Given how weird his injury was, I don't know. Maybe you probably slow play, and also like he has to get in shape. Like he's like, you're sure, like running and non-contact is great, but like an NBA game is obviously a lot different. So I think it's going to be kind of like a five by committee thing for a while, even after Porzingis comes back.
Who else are we looking at? Is it just going to be Horford, who is going to be part time? As he has been for the last couple of seasons, like I'm sure no back to backs or anything like that. And then you have Xavier Tillman. Are we seeing Keita in there? We saw him, you know, he was on the 2-way contract last year and got the upgrade. How much do you see him playing into the regular season?
Well, we were just talking about it. He's great at doing stuff like rebounds, foul trouble. What was it that
that's
you had?
The issue. Yeah, I was looking at it because he only has 4 fouls in 4 games, which on the surface looks great. But he's only played 25 minutes, so it's really not that great. So the problem is with Keita, there's just so much room for development. And this is kind of the best way to develop him, get him out there with this lineup who he's allowed to make mistakes with this group because they are so talented. The players around him are going to mask the mistakes he makes. It's not like he's going to go over there and just destroy a game. He's not going to blow up the entire game. He's going to make little mistakes like fouling, which was a big problem last year. So I think he's definitely going to play a role. All three of them are going to see court time while Porzingis is out.
It's going to make for a lot of different interesting lineups. I know one other lineup that all of us are very curious about is seeing how much Tatum might be at the five. That's something that in the last playoff run we were looking at going, oh, maybe they'll have that here or there when Porzingis was out. Didn't really get to see it. I wonder if that's something he'd embrace. What do you guys think?
It makes sense. And I think it would be kind of like I wonder who you would slot in. So if Tatum's at the five, who takes sort of his sort of four-ish position? Because that's, you know, he was listed as a small forward in the GM thing, in the NBA GM survey. So I think that like opens up a lot of really interesting possibilities for the team as a whole. And maybe it's like a mini, not the same way that Golden State was, but like almost like a lineup of death. Is like, all right, we're just going to outrun and outshoot everyone. That could be fun. It also could be like, how much could he defend guys who are bigger than him?
Yeah, what do you do against Embiid? What do you do against Giannis?
Right.
I feel like that's when Jordan Walsh comes in. A guy that, when they go smaller, can fill in. Kind of like the O'Shea Brissett did last year. And again, those minutes are wide open. It wasn't a ton of minutes. It was only about 700. But he played that role so well where he came in and was able to rebound and was able to sway a game. And Jordan Walsh has really impressed me this preseason. I think he's one that's probably been the biggest surprise and honestly might be the biggest winner of the preseason right now because he's made the most of every opportunity. It's been a complete 180 from what we saw from him
and
in summer league.
He's talked about his mental approach a little bit and that that's changed. Just really quick before we move on to the season opener, I do look at the end of the bench and it's such a battle down there. Like, there are a lot of guys who are going to be spending time in Maine that I think in other organizations would be on the bench in the big league, you know? And So I'm wondering, when you look at those like 11, 12 spots, so if Cada is going to be in there because of his ability to be in that big spot, and then you look and you go, okay, is that going to be Jordan Walsh? And this is talking while Porzingis is injured.
Right.
Is Jordan Walsh going to be in there? Is it going to be Davison maybe with his defense? Is it, you know, there's like also five guards who are going to be playing in Maine potentially.
But that's been like sort of the Celtics' MO for a while, right? Is that they've had a bunch of guys up there in Maine consistently. Like, oh, like they're just sort of locking these guys away. But people who are paying attention is like, have you seen what those guys are doing? And like, Other you know, teams would love to have that problem. I feel like that's a good problem to have.
I'll tell you what those guys aren't doing is going out in Portland. Because I spent a lot of time in Portland, including in the winter. My family lives up there.
Yeah.
And I never see those guys out anywhere.
You ever had the potato donuts?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They're great. They're fantastic.
Yeah, I forget the holy donut.
Yeah. Those are
can you ever had that?
No, but it sounds delicious.
They're a little overrated. I'm not a big donut head, so I'm not like a connoisseur.
I mean, neither
am I.
I'm just like, wow, these are great donuts. I don't know what makes them different.
Every
from
time
other
somebody
donuts.
Comes to visit, they want one of those holy donuts, and I'm like, they're like pretty good. Now I'm realizing our podcast is not getting a holy donut sponsorship.
It's okay,
but it's just okay. I don't know. That's not the kind of thing that gets me going.
Shout out holy donuts. If you want to send us donuts,
send them to Esteban.
I'll take one too. Yeah, just never tried it, so why not?
All right. Before we move on to our expectations for opening night, just on Twitter today, X, I still call it Twitter because I don't like it as
it's
X.
Twitter.
It's Twitter to me. Tyler Conway had this tweet from Bleacher Report that was so disrespectfully funny. I got to bring this up and I sent it to you guys.
Yeah.
It was with Ian Rappaport with the breaking news of Davante Adams being traded from Vegas to the Jets. And Tyler Conway quote tweets it with our guy Paul Pierce and KG and says Aaron Rodgers and Davante Adams with the Jets.
Nasty
this
work.
This is to clarify, Pierce and KG when they were with Brooklyn.
Exactly. Way to paint the mental picture. Yes. It literally, like, now looking at this, and I like to forget that era of the Celtics in their ultimate rebuild and that trade to Brooklyn, which was very smart but hard. But you look at this picture, and I please go look at it again. It's at J. Tyler Conway. It looks like it's Photoshop now, doesn't it?
Yeah. But it is not unique to football or any sport. Like, teams will almost always pay today's money for yesterday's stars. And usually with the idea we want the payback on the front end. Really, you need it on the back end. Like, it's got to come from, like, the development and picks and stuff like that.
Like,
the
Celtics thing.
But even that is a risk.
I know it's not a football podcast, but this trade felt a lot different. Like, this is kind of the panic button, try to save yourself from one of the biggest disasters in NFL history in Aaron Rodgers.
And it's also like, I don't know, is it the Raiders building for the future in the same way that the Celtics did? I don't know if it's a perfect one-to-one.
But it is
pretty
funny.
Mean. It's pretty mean. It's pretty funny. I like a funny, mean tweet. Yeah.